Hey everybody, it's David. Welcome to the Believer Center podcast. At the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download our free Believer Center app where you can access all our recent message content. It's the easiest way for you to share all of this content with a friend and keep up with everything going on around here at Believer Center. But most importantly, we hope this week's message helps you as we follow Jesus together. Enjoy. I would invite you, if you have your Bibles, to turn with me to Matthew chapter 17. Matthew 17. While you're turning there, I just want to reiterate what Lauren said is today is BC Connect signups. BC Connect is our small group ministry, and it is our best attempt to offer you godly, healthy community on a silver platter. And so if you're believing God for more relationships or maybe better relationships, you have got no reason to not sign up for a small group or two today after service. It's really, really cool. We've been grateful for the success so far. Love to have you part. Okay, Matthew chapter 17, verse 14 says this. When they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. "Lord, have mercy on my son," he said. "He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire and into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him." Jesus says, "You unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." Jesus rebuked the demon and it came out of the boy and he was healed at that moment. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "Because you have so little faith. Truly, I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." Can somebody say a good amen? So we are in a series. We're actually concluding a four-week series this morning that I have entitled Put People in Their Place. And whenever you're hearing that, you're probably thinking, oh yeah, we're finally going to put people in. What I'm talking about is the importance of putting the right people in the right places in your life. That it's not just about having the right people, but it's about having the right people in the right places. You cannot get life right if you get relationships wrong. And so we've talked about different kinds of relationships. In week one, we kind of discussed the subject. And then week two, we talked about the relationship of a friend. And then in week three, last week, we talked about the relationship of an associate. And what I'm wanting to do this morning as we close the series is I'm wanting to shift the conversation from what I'm calling horizontal relationships. Right. So I'm your friend. I'm your associate. It's horizontal to a more diagonal or maybe a more vertical relationship. And if you're taking notes for my note takers, the title this morning is this, the ministry of a mentor. The ministry of a mentor. You know, if you are a fan of sports, you have no doubt been following what is known as March Madness. March Madness is going on. I believe that there's games today. And as such a huge sports fan, I know this. And also because I Googled it, March Madness is a single elimination college basketball tournament. It's comprised of 68 teams, so it's 67 games, where each team is eliminated one by one by one by one until there is just one champion remaining. I don't know who the guy is on the left, but he doesn't look like very good to me. Doesn't look like he can jump very high. By my count, this is the 84th annual March Madness tournament. Does anybody know the team that has the most March Madness wins coming in at 11 tournament championships? It's the UCLA Bruins at 11. I've never even heard of that team, but apparently they're really good. Can't believe there's a team called the Bruins. That sounds like the 1980s. Oh, it is the games. Okay. But if you're a sports fan, you undoubtedly know that the success of a team is not just based on and dependent on the players on the field or the court. It is equally determined by the success of the coaches on the sidelines. See, the players, they play the game, but the coaches develop the game plan. And the success of the players are going to be limited, either limited or bolstered by the success of the coach. You could say it like this. The players are able to perform at their highest level in public because of the coaches who developed them in private. A successful player has all kinds of coaches. I Googled it. Head coaches, assistant coaches, strength and conditioning coaches, speed and agility coaches, character coaches. They all contribute to turning a talented player into a great player. God puts the talent in, and the coach pulls the talent out. And as in sports, so it is in the game of life, that everyone who is growing and advancing at some point is going to hit a season or a situation that is going to require expertise outside of yourself, where you have the ability, but you don't have the expertise. You have the acumen, but you don't have the experience. You have the will and the willpower, but you don't have the wisdom. You need a coach. And God, in his wisdom and in his grace expressed towards us, will bring people, sends people into our lives to help us become strong where we're weak. Because everybody is weak and strong somewhere. Even you. Even the greatest of the great in any area has a strength, but they also have a weakness. And God comes and brings us, like at some point your marriage may hit a season that requires expertise that you don't have, right? At some point your career may hit a season that requires expertise that you don't have. At some point your money is going to come into a season that's going to require expertise that you don't have. And woe to the person that believes they are so smart and so brilliant that they no longer need anyone to teach them. And I've thought about the word mentor, and I've kind of struggled with it. And I went back and forth with using the word mentor because it sounds very formal, doesn't it? It sounds like when you have a mentor that you would introduce them as, "This is my mentor. Hey, this is Javi. He's my mentor." Look, mentor does not need to be formal, and what I'm talking about here does not need to be formal. You could call your mentor your friend. You could call them your boss. You could call them your pastor. You could call them your sibling. But the idea of a mentor is somebody who loves you enough to help you and who embodies a desired destination, hear me, a desired destination in some area for you. So they are where you want to be, and they love you enough to help you. And so our text, I think, that we just read, I think is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Jesus, of course, is the master mentor. He's the, if 2,000 years later, you live a life, and 2,000 years later, people are still gathering around in rooms all across the world, teaching and dissecting your life and your teachings, you can be confident that you have the mentorship thing on lock. And so he is the master mentor that we can all learn from. And in Matthew chapter 17, we read the story of a man who has a son who's sick, right? And so what he does, it's a natural issue that has spiritual origins, right? It's a natural issue. He's having seizures, but it's a spiritual origin in that it's a demonic issue. That's not always the case, right? Not all sickness is demonic. Scripture doesn't teach that. But in this particular case, it's a natural issue with a demonic origin. And the first step in getting healed or getting better is accurate diagnosis. You know what I'm saying? You can see this in the medical field too, right? That if you have a tumor, but your doctor just thinks you have a lot of stress, his treatment for the stress is not going to heal the tumor, right? If you have an ulcer and you just think you have heartburn, like you can take all the Tums in the world, bathtubs full, And it's not going to heal your, it's not going to heal your ulcer. And people who have a hard time, diagnosing issues are going to have, are going to struggle telling the difference between cycles and seasons. What does that mean? Cycles and seasons. Well, you could say it like this. A season is something that changes with time. A cycle changes when you do. See, a season comes and goes, and the thing that brings a season to a close is time. But a cycle will repeat itself for as long as you remain the same. So if you're doing the same thing over and over and over and getting the same results over and over and over, that's not a season. That's a cycle, right? If you keep dating the same person, right? Different body type, different name, but same person, right? And you keep getting the same results. That's not a season. That's a cycle. If you keep moving from job to job to job to job, always thinking it's their issue and never yours, that's not a season. That's a cycle. If you have the same fight with your spouse over and over and over and over and always convinced that they're the problem and it's never you, that's not a season. That's a cycle. And you cannot fix what you won't accurately diagnose. And so they're able to diagnose this problem with this son, right? So the father brings the son to Jesus. And on the way to meeting Jesus, he encounters the team. He encounters the disciples. So he comes and he looks at the disciples and he says, hey, you all are in the spiritual business, right? I mean, I need you to do something for me here. Like you guys live with Jesus. You walk with Jesus. You've been anointed to do the things that Jesus does. I need you to help me. You're walking around like you own the place. You know, you're stopping, blocking kids from coming to Jesus. And Jesus has to say, don't stop the kids from coming to me. And then there's blind Bartimaeus. And you're saying, like, be quiet. And he's calling out for Jesus. So you're walking around like you're all that in a bag of chips. I need you to do something for me. Because I have a son that's sick. And so then the disciples, they get all spiritual, right? They get all deep. All right, fellas, here we go. Demon, come out, right? Demon, I command you to come out, right? And the demon is just like filing his nails, checking his watch, come out. And the father, you know, looks at the disciples like, very impressive, fellas. That was really great. Where's Jesus? And this is what I love about the father is that he didn't let the failure of the disciples stop him from pursuing Jesus. A critical point, right? That he could have got all hurt. Oh, this whole thing is bogus. I can't believe these guys are hypocrite. You know, they work at the store. They ought to know where the stuff is. Like, clearly this is a big old hoax, right? He doesn't let the failure of the team stop him from pursuing Jesus. He just looks past the team and continues to pursue Jesus. It's critical, right? And so he goes to Jesus and he tattles, as any good father would do. He said, well, hey, your super cool and spiritual disciples tried to do an exorcism on my son, and it didn't work. So I'm going to need you to do so. And I love this about Jesus, because Jesus is a good leader, right? And here's what he does as a leader. He takes responsibility for something that's not even his fault. That's what a leader does, right? You cannot simultaneously lead and blame. Right? A real leader says, that's not my fault, but it's my responsibility. And he looks at the disciples, Jesus, and he says, let's read it again. He says, you unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? And on the surface, of course, this seems mean, right? It's just like, Jesus, chill. They tried, you know, they did their best. I mean, they're trying. And I didn't understand what was happening here with Jesus. I didn't understand the content of the story because I didn't understand the context of the story. I didn't understand the story that was happening around the story, because Jesus said what he said in Matthew chapter 17 because of what he did in Matthew chapter 10. What, Pastor, what did he do in Matthew chapter 10? Well, let's read it. Verse 1 says this. Jesus, so this is seven chapters earlier. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them, listen to this, authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. So what you have here is in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus equips and trains the disciples to handle this kind of situation. And then in Matthew chapter 17, we see the disciples unable to put into practice what Jesus taught them how to do. And so Jesus is frustrated, right? But Jesus is saying, how many times am I going to have to reteach you this? Right? Because I spent some time with you because I saw this kind of situation coming. Right? But you were bored. You didn't think what I was telling you in that season was important because that's not the season you were in. Right? So you took my mentorship for granted. You didn't know Matthew chapter 17 was coming, but I did. And so I was trying to prepare you for chapter 17, but because it didn't apply to you in Matthew chapter 10, you didn't think it was important. And so he knew that Matthew chapter 17 was coming. See, you got to understand that Jesus's timing is always perfect. God's timing is always perfect. And so if he's teaching you something that you think, I'm not sure that applies to me right now, well, just hold on. Learn the lesson. Because just because it doesn't apply to you right now doesn't mean that it won't apply to you in your next season. But see, the disciples, they had apathy. Right there thinking, oh boy, here he goes. He's talking about all this demon stuff. I don't do demon stuff. You know, Peter, that's kind of your business. I don't, you know, this part doesn't really apply to me. I'm not going to take notes here. And I can actually sympathize with that. Years ago, 20 years ago now, I went to Bible college in Colorado. And I went to a college of a man named Andrew Womack. Some of you may know him. He's a man that I have great respect for. I'm very different from, but I have great respect for. And in that season of my life, this 2 years where I was under his tutelage, he absolutely was a mentor to me. Now his college is huge. It's like 700 people. It's like 1,000 people, something like that. But back in my class, there was like 25 of us. And so that afforded us a very intimate relationship with our mentor, to where he would be able to spend one-on-one time with all of us. So he would travel and he would go to, you know, speak at this church a couple hours away, and he would bring one or two of us along with him. And so we would travel with him and we would eat with him, and then we would like work his CD table or something while we were at the conference that he was speaking at. And I remember one time I was in the car, I was in a vehicle with Andrew, and we were talking about something. And he told me, He said, David, you're very agreeable. And that's great. It's much better than the alternative. And it's important to you that people like you. You like it when people like you. And that's good. That's a strength. He says, but your personality is going to result in people being drawn to you and being around you. And he says, you're just going to have to watch out that you don't become agreeable and become the person that these people want you to be rather than who God made you to be. And you know what I think I said? I think I probably said, yes, sir. But you know what I was thinking on the inside? This. because he was working with the assumption that I was going to be in ministry. I wasn't going to be in ministry. I was going to be a musician. So I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. That has nothing to do with my life. That's just generic advice. But I filed it away, right? Okay. Ooh. Yes, sir. Well, 15 years passes, and I find myself having done exactly what he warned me not to do. Right? There was a season in my life where I was attempting to pastor a certain group of people. And in doing so, I thought I was becoming the pastor that they needed me to be. And I thought what I was doing was providing a lifeline for them to the church. Right? But then as the season started to change and the thing that we had built together started to implode on itself, and all the people that I thought were going to be my ride or die people forever started to leave, I could see clearly that I had started to form my ministerial identity, not around who God had made me, but who I felt like these people needed me to be. And that temptation is super strong for people who do this. It's really hard to not come up here and do this in a way that I think you're going to like, right? That I look at people on TV and I see, well, that seems like that's working. Maybe I ought to try to be a Stephen Furtick guy, or I ought to be a Judah Smith guy or whatever. Instead of just saying, you know what? I am who God made me, and I'm not going to let the pull of other people come and turn me into who they want me to be. Right? And so when I read this story in Matthew chapter 17 of the disciples not learning their lesson because that's not the season that they were currently in, I can see myself in that story. I can see myself ignoring leadership from a mentor that seems like it doesn't apply to me right now, and not considering that it may apply to me in a future situation. Okay, so Jesus comes and he tells the disciples basically, like, how long am I going to keep telling you this? Right? How many failed exorcisms are you going to have before you learn? Right? How many failed marriages are you going to have, right, before you learn the lesson? How many failed business relationships are you going to have before you learn the lesson? How much ridiculous fighting in your family are you going to tolerate before you learn the things that I'm trying to tell you? Because at this point, it's not a season, it's a cycle. And some people are really bothered, of course, by Jesus' straightforwardness, right? That he's very straightforward. But I believe straightforwardness is a critical component of any successful relationship, no matter the dynamic, right? Because the disciples weren't having to wonder where Jesus was at emotionally. You know what I mean? He wasn't being passive aggressive. He's not trying to insert teaching in really passive ways, right? He's not thinking one thing and saying another thing. He's not masking what he thinks through sarcasm. He just says what he thinks. And it's one of the hardest things in the world to be married to someone or to be mentored by someone where you're always having to wonder where they're at emotionally. Are they mad today? Are they not mad today? Do they like me today? Do they not like me today? See, but Jesus at least, even though he was tough, I think he was fair and he's straightforward. And so Jesus comes and he says, bring me the boy, bring me the boy. He heals the boy, of course, and the father and the son leave. And later the disciples come in private. And I think that this is so amazing that the disciples, for as much grief as I give these 12 wacky brothers, they do have moments of greatness. And I think that this is one of them. They come to Jesus and they ask him, they say, why couldn't we drive that out? Right? Because they're not trying to impress somebody they're called to learn from. And I see that all the time, right? Where people ought to be learning, but instead what they're doing is they're trying to impress the people that are above them instead of learning from them. And so they say, hey, you know, what did we do wrong? They could have spent years trying to figure this out on their own. You know what I mean? Trying, experimenting on people, learning the hard way, right? But Jesus saved them potentially years by having one conversation. And that's what mentorship does. You could say it like this. Mentorship allows you to go to school at the expense of somebody else's tuition. And I know that's a weird sentence, but y'all know what I mean. I couldn't figure a way to make it better. It allows you to go to school while somebody else had paid the tuition, right? You can have a 3-minute conversation with a mentor and they will share something with you that it took them 3 years to learn. They paid 3 years to learn that. And they're willing to share that with you for free. That's why even failure in Christian community like this, even failure is very valuable, right? Because you paid a price doing it the wrong way. And now one of the redemptive parts of that is that maybe because you paid the price, maybe someone else doesn't have to, right? So maybe for you, you got pregnant as a teenager. Right, or maybe even a better example. Maybe you decided that you were going to try cocaine one time just for fun. And now 15 years of your life has passed, and you're wondering where the last 15 years went. But now God has healed you. And what's great is this, is that you paid 15 years of your life to learn that. And through the miracle of mentorship, you can teach someone that lesson, and it costs them 3 minutes. It costs them 15 minutes. It costs them one lunch with you, something that costs you 15 years of your life, right? So you're able to ride the scholarship of the people who came before you, who blazed the trail, and now you get to learn those lessons and get on the fast track to success instead of slogging through like they had to. You need someone who's not so impressed by you, but that loves you enough to point out the holes in your game. They're so blown away. Oh, Javi, he's so incredible. Oh my gosh, everything he does is right. Like, there needs to be someone who loves you enough to tell you the truth, right? That's not so blown away by your incredible skills and not so insecure about you threatening them, right? That they can tell you what you need to do to get to the next level. And notice, remember I said at the right time and in the right area. That's very important, right? Because it's not going to be all the time. And it's not going to be in every area. This is my experience. That may not be the case for you, but I have not personally found a Yoda for me that is fantastic at everything I'm trying to do or be. Right? That there's people who are really great at this, but they're not super great at that. That's fine, because it doesn't have to be in every area. You can mentor me in one area, and I'm all ears, even though I know maybe way more than you when it comes to living your life scripturally. But maybe you can teach me about business, right? Maybe you can teach me about how to do 100 different things, and you can mentor me in the right time in my life and in the right season. You say it like this: God knows how to bring the right people into your life at the right time and in the right area. Listen to this: but you must see who he sends. You must see who he sends. Otherwise, they're going to come and they're going to go, and you don't even realize that that was a strategic relationship for you. That there was something for you in that season and in that person that God was trying to teach you. And so you have to know what to look for in people so that you can recognize them when they come. And listen to this. This is like a two-sided message, right? This also helps because this lets you also know what you have to offer people if you are to be a mentor, right? And if you're a disciple of Jesus, if you're a disciple maker, just come to peace with this. You are a mentor in some way to somebody, right? That there are people. And so I've got like four traits for you. Jesus is the master mentor, and Jesus is, he shows us, I believe, these four things that we can learn from him. And this applies to any area, right? I know part of it's like, oh, I'm always going to talk about ministry. This applies to any area. This would be a financial mentor. It applies to marital mentorship, mental mentorship. Maybe it's a grief counselor. It applies to everybody. And if you're thinking, man, I don't mentor anybody, I just kind of like live my life, I want you to think outside of the box and ask yourself this: who do I have influence over? Who do, when they hang out with me, they start to look more like me? Right? I think of my dad. He's just a funny example. My nephew, Evan, is he in here? Oh, he's in there. Yeah. Like Evan, sometimes I hang out with him and I'm like, you are like a little Dana. It's like, you're my dad, even though you're only 10. See, Craig, how old are you? 11. Even though you're only 11, you're like my dad. Right? And so you have to think, who am I? Who has God placed in my life that I can influence in a positive or negative way? Right? And parents, listen to me. All the parents in the room, there is nobody that this applies to more directly than you. Right? Parents, grandparents in here, look, kids will, there is no relationship in their life that will be more formative than their relationship with you. Right? And you might, like, youth pastors are great. Youth pastors are important. Children's pastors are great, and they're important. And God can even use those relationships to fill the void for dysfunctional and unhealthy parenting or absent parenting. But the way that it's supposed to work and the way that it ought to work is that your children are gleaning all the time from what you say, and even more importantly, what you do. How you respond outside of God's divine intervention becomes how they respond. Right? How you treat your spouse becomes how they treat their spouse. Right? God can always, we always have inadequacies, right? Give yourself grace. You're a parent. You're going to mess it up a billion times, just like we all do. But just understand this, that you are a mentor. If you're a parent, you got a little you running around. And they're teaching, and they're learning from you all the time. And so we have to learn these traits so that we can learn from the people that God has us learn from. But also, we have to learn these traits so that we can know what to offer people if we want to influence them in a positive way and not just a negative way. Okay, 4 points. And there are 4 C's. Are y'all with me? 4 C's. The first one is this. A trait of a mentor is this: character. In any relationship, if you're in any kind of relationship, their lack of character becomes your crisis. Now, all of a sudden, their lack of character becomes your issue, right? And so here's some examples. They shouldn't be counseling you if they don't have character, right? They shouldn't be representing you in the courtroom if they don't have character. They shouldn't be handling your health care if they don't have character. They shouldn't be coaching you in your marriage if they don't have character. And look, listen, they don't even have to share your faith, but they do have to share some of your values, right? Who wants a financial advisor that's a liar? Nobody, right? And so if you encounter someone in your life that's successful, but they don't have character, just move on. God's got someone better for you. Right. The first thing a mentor has to have is character. And this includes being emotionally healthy. Right. Being successful. Remember this. Being successful does not mean being wise. Right. Just because someone has $1 billion in the bank doesn't mean they have anything to teach you. Right. Vladimir Putin seems like a pretty successful guy in a lot of ways. He's got nothing to teach you. Right. First trait is character, right? They have to have character. See, Jesus was emotionally healthy, right? So he was neither intimidated by or embarrassed by his disciples, right? You cannot mentor people you're competing with. Like, if you want to successfully mentor someone, you have to hope and your goal has to be that they become better than you, right? And so when they succeed, you succeed, right? So we're not competing. He's not embarrassed by his disciples, but he's championing them on. He's mentoring them in the process, and he's secure about it. He's emotionally healthy because he has character. Number two is this: coaching. Coaching. So character means you're a good person, but it doesn't mean you know how to give good help, right? Just because you know how to do doesn't mean you necessarily know how to teach. Right? There's a lot of people who are really successful in a lot of different areas, but they might not know hardly anything when it comes to imparting that to you. Right? And so it's not just about the character, it's also about the expertise and the ability to impart that information to you. It's about being able to do the job. Right? Let's say you hire someone for your company to do photography. Well, they might be the nicest person in the world, but if they're a terrible photographer, it's not going to work. And so whatever area you need a mentor in, you need to find someone who has expertise. And I was thinking about what I mean by expertise, and it's this. It's one or the other, but preferably both of these things: experience or success. They've had experience with what you're battling, and hopefully they've had success in what you're battling, right? And the higher level, this is an important distinction. The higher level of your expertise, the level of expertise your mentor will need. And that's why mentorship sometimes becomes a little bit of a challenge when you become successful, right? Because you still have to locate someone who is the desired destination for you. And sometimes that can be hard. So let's say like we've got a 19-year-old in here, and let's see, what's an example? Okay, they want to join the police. Well, they can come to me, and I can probably point them in the right direction. You know, I can say like, okay, well, I think there's a test, and we've got to start getting you in shape. You know, look at that belly. We've got to get that off you. We can like work on some regular things that will help them, because their level of expertise is like nothing. And so I can help them. But let's say we have like a police captain. Gordon, I don't even know the right words. You got a police captain and they're wanting to go to the next level. What's the next level? Deputy chief, right? They're a captain and they want to be a deputy chief. Well, don't ask me. I don't know. I don't know what it takes to go from a captain to a deputy chief. Ask Gordon. Right? Because he has the expertise. He has the experience and the success. And that's what you need in a mentor. Right? So, I was thinking about this. A practical example is I do a fair amount of marital counseling here at the church. And so I work with and deal with couples who have great things in their marriage or sometimes challenges in their marriage. And my wife and I, we've been married for going on 14 years. Is that right? Dangerous. And I think that we have one of the best relationships that I know, right? Like and I'm not trying to brag. I'm making a point here. We live at peace with each other. And I think that there's a lot of couples who could learn a great deal just from observing how we treat each other and how we relate to each other. But there are people in the church family that have more relational expertise than we do, right? Marshall and Cindy, they've been married for 75 years. That's incredible. God. We're family. We're family. I can make that joke. You can't make that joke. I mean, right, Pastor Shirley, she was married to Larry for, I don't even know, 40 years to Larry before he went to heaven, right? Donna Berna Woods, they oversee the marital program here, right? They've got great wisdom, and they have been in seasons that Jordan and I have not been in yet, right? And so, like, let's say you're someone who's dealing with the loss of a spouse, right? That me and Jordan can give you advice. But if you were to ask us, if you're looking for a mentor to mentor you through that, I might point you to Shirley because she's been through that. And so it's just this idea of finding someone who has the ability to coach you. They have the expertise, but they're also the desired destination that you're trying to achieve in that area. And we need to move on. Oh my gosh, we got to move on. But I'll say this, 2 seconds. The quality of your mentorship will be based on the quality of the questions that you ask. We can see this in the disciples, that there's a lot of times when they come and the reason that they learn is because they ask the right question. They see Jesus praying in the Lord's Prayer and they say, teach us how to pray, even though they've been praying their entire life. They see that Jesus knows how to pray at another level. And so they come to him and say, reteach us something that we already thought we knew. Right? Because they're able to see something. And so what don't you know because you don't ask? Right? Where are you making assumptions where you could be learning? Oh, it's just so easy for them. That's almost never the case. People tell me all the time, oh, speaking must be so easy for you. Pastor Cindy can tell you, nothing about this is easy for me. Right? This has been a grind for me. Right, but you need to learn to ask questions. If you're wanting to learn, maybe I'm wanting to learn about gun hand, I don't know, Randy, I'll go over and ask him questions. I won't just sit there and pout because he doesn't come and offer me information. Right, that if I want to be mentored, I have to have the courage to go and ask questions. Okay, number three, the third C is this, correction. A mentor has to offer correction. People who are going to advance must be willing to have their error exposed. And it's not easy. It's not easy to have someone you admire come and tell you that you could have done that better, right? Or that you messed up there, or that you, or that you need to grow in this area. But that's a biblical concept that we see. Certainly we see it with Jesus, but look at this. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 1 says this, "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but whoever hates correction is stupid." So leave that up, because they're going to think I made that up. Mom, they're going to think I made that verse up. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but whoever hates correction is stupid. Right? What's he saying here? They're saying it's dumb to want to be right more than you want to be better. It's dumb to want to be affirmed more than you want to improve. Right? That you have to be willing to reveal to your mentors that you have chinks in the armor and you have places to grow. We see it in Jesus. Matthew chapter 16, verse 22 says this. Peter took him, talking about Jesus, aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan." I think some of us couldn't have walked with Jesus because we couldn't have handled the correction. But that's what a mentor provides. Lastly, number four, and I'm done, covering. A mentor provides covering. And let me say this, that this word covering has been abused. If it didn't start with the word, if the letter C, I probably wouldn't have used it. I needed another C. There's a lot of church and religious cultures that have abused the word covering where it really means control. Right, where they're leading you, but they're not leading you into your destiny. They're leading you into their desires for you. Right, so let's say we have someone who runs a camera or something, and they have an opportunity to do something they feel really called to, and it's in Los Angeles. Well, sometimes people would use the word covering as a way to control you, to steer you towards whatever's going to help them, because they still want a camera guy. But they're not going to steer you towards your destiny. They're going to steer you towards their preference for you. But covering is a biblical concept that I think we need to not abandon. And the idea of covering is this, is that God will put people in your life to protect you, oftentimes from your own stupidity. This is what I tell people oftentimes in counseling. I say it's hard to read the label when you're in the jar. Right, that when you're in it, sometimes it's hard to see it real clear. Right, that when you're facing the issue, it's sometimes hard to know what you ought to do. But you have covering, right? You have people who are covering you who can say, "Stan, you're overreacting. Stan, that's not the right thing. Come in. We're going to pray about it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to figure out what to do." And there's covering there. It says in Proverbs 11 that in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Perfect word for it. In a multitude of counselors, there is safety. You ready for me to talk for real here for just a minute? Okay. I have learned this. That I'm some people's pastor and I'm some people's preacher. And for others of you, I'm one of the guys that sometimes preaches at the church you sometimes go to when you sometimes go to church. And those are all fine relationships. But if our relationship is you come in here and you listen to me talk, and then you go out and you make your own life-altering decisions without at least attempting to get covering, I'm a preacher to you, and that's fine, right? But to be in a relationship where you are pastored, right? Where you receive this biblical concept of covering, right? Is to invite people into the process, but you're not so busy trying to impress Marshall and Cindy that you don't talk to them until you've already decided. That's not pastoring. Pastoring is getting covering, receiving wise counsel, right? And so I'm just saying, let's not call it something that it's not. Because there is this beautiful concept that's available to you, but it requires that you push forward. and seek godly counseling, seek godly mentorship, right? So maybe you're making a life-altering decision. You're deciding, you know what, I think I'm going to leave my spouse. It's time. This ain't working for me, right? Well, and you just make that decision and then you come tell us. Instead of maybe coming and submitting to a process, right, with Pastor Marshall or Pastor Shirley, for example, right, where we can say, look, what's going on here? Let's pray about it. Let's ask God's wisdom together. Maybe we can talk through some of the issues and that you could pull from some of the expertise that pastoral ministry provides you by dealing with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of couples over 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, right? And so it's just this thing. And so we have this balance to strike, us and you guys, right? That on one hand, we never want covering to be an excuse for us to control you, right? And what you need is to trust us enough to know and to believe that we would counsel you into your destiny and unto our preferences for you, that you would trust us with that. And then on the other side, you have this where it's like, I'm not going to ask those guys. You know, I'm just going to tell them, you know, write them a letter. Here, I left, whatever. That there is a balance to be struck. You know what I mean? Where you believe that there is wisdom, there is safety in a multitude of counselors, that you would come and you'd say, like, I believe this is what God is doing. Right? Does that sound right? Especially when we live in a world of God said, God said, God said, God said, right? Where everything is always God said. Let me say it like this. Hearing and receiving from God, I think of it kind of in like three phases. Number one is revelation. So that's between you and God. That's what God told you. We're never going to tell you that God did or did not say that, as long as it doesn't go against the... But hey, you know, he told you you're going to start a business. Look, that's between you and God. That's number one, revelation. Next is interpretation, right? What does this mean, right? Okay, that's what he said. What does that mean? What does that mean for you? And those of you who think interpretation is not required, has not spent a lot of time in the... There's a lot of interpretation required. And the third one is application. How do I live this out? How do I live this out with integrity, right? How do I do this honorably? And so the first one, that's between you and God, what God said. But number two, what does that mean for me? What does that mean for my family? And number three, application, how do I live this out? That's where you need counsel. But that's where you need someone to come and speak into your life that has experience that maybe you don't have. Maybe for you, this is the first time you've ever gone through this. But you can talk to someone and they'll give you 15 minutes of their time and they've gone through it 100 times. How valuable is that? To be able to be mentored by people who give you that experience. And covering is never meant to be a cap, right? Caps limit you, right? Coverings are never meant to be caps. It's an umbrella, right? So no matter if you go low, you're still covered. And as high as you go, right, you're still covered, right? So you're not capped, but you're protected from what's in the atmosphere from getting on you. Right, because when you're wearing nice clothes and you go out in the elements and you don't have an umbrella and it starts raining, what's in the atmosphere gets on your clothes. And in the same way, when you go out in life and you have this beautiful gifting, right, you have this beautiful anointing, you have this beautiful strength on the inside of you that's so great, right, that you can go out and you can go out into the world and what's in the world can come in and ruin that beautiful thing that God has on you. And so covering can provide you with this. It's like, we're not trying to stop you from going where you're going to go, but we just want to protect you. It's us saying like, look, we already got wet, so you don't have to. You know what I mean? We've already been through some stuff and we're just trying to help you. We're not trying to cap you. It's just this process of living it out. I've received this revelation, but now I need to interpret it and I need to apply it. How does that work for me? This is one of the ways that it played out in my life. So years ago, when I was like a little, you know, just coming out of my teenage years, I had a very close friend, and we were bad influences on each other, right? He wasn't worse than me. We were the same. Remember, I told you maybe in week 2 that some relationships, for that relationship to be their best, you have to be at your worst, right? That was this relationship for me, right? That it was strongest when I was at my worst. But I felt like God was doing something in me. And I felt like God was starting to speak to me about a life that he had for me. But I didn't know how to manage that because I couldn't fault this guy, right? Because he's the same as I was, right? And so but I was just starting to feel like, man, maybe this relationship was okay for where I was, but it's not okay for where I was going. And so I went and I talked with my, at the time, youth pastor, Dave Angier. And we talked about it, and I shared that with him, and he gave me wisdom. And for 2 years, he walked that through with me, right? Where he showed me how to rise to a higher level without disrespecting and dishonoring the people that you leave behind, right? And in doing so, even encouraging them to come along with you. It's up to them if they will. Right, but for 2 years, he showed me how to do that. I had the revelation. God is showing me this. I need someone to come into my life and show me what that looks like. So maybe for you, it's like God's showing you, you're going to start a new business. Okay, well, so I'm just going to quit my job. But you need some counsel. Hold on. Is that the right thing? We know that's what God said. That's cool. That's what God said to you. How do we play that out? Right? How do we do that? With maturity, with honor, with integrity. How do we play that out? So those are the four: character, coaching, correction, and covering. Those are things that you need, but those are also things that you need to become if you're wanting to be the best influence that you can be to the people around you. And as we close the series, this is the end of the series, I wanted to read something. Sometimes when I come up with a series concept, or maybe God gives it to me, I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. I'm like, it's called this. And people are like, oh yeah, what's it about? And I'm like, I don't know. That's what it's called. Sometimes I'll write something. I'll just write a couple paragraphs where I'm going to try to convey what it is. I write down what I'm going to try to convey to you. And so this is something that I wrote, one of the first things that I wrote down when it came to the series, but it's my prayer for you guys going forward. And so I hope you receive it. And I think it's 2 slides, and they're a little bit long, but not too bad. Here's what I wrote. It's worth the effort to position people in your life correctly, not to judge them, but to place them in a way that will let your peace, your development, and your purpose thrive. My prayer for you, dear family, is that God will place close, meaningful friends around you who have privileged access to you and to your heart. People who will care for you and pour into you as an expression of God's grace towards you. I pray that God will help you see the people that you need to learn from, and that he would give you the ability to lead others with wisdom and integrity. I pray that God will give you the clarity and the courage to distance yourself from people who are unhelpful to you in accomplishing your purpose, that God will help you recognize when the season of a relationship has changed, not to leave an empty void, but to provide space and time for the right people in the right seasons.